Talking Industry, topical debate from the world of engineering, automation, and manufacturing. Brought to you by DFA Media Group. This episode is sponsored by Drives and Controls, the number one event for automation, power transmission, and motion control. Taking place the 5th and the 6th of June 2024 at the NEC Birmingham, in association with Smart Manufacturing and Engineering Week. Register now at www.drives-expo.com.
Okay, and a very good warm welcome from Talking Industry. My name is Andy Pye. I'm consultant editor at DFA Media Group. And it's my pleasure today to introduce two excellent speakers. We'll be talking on the subject of IIoT, digitalization, industrial communications, with a special focus on network connectivity. My two guests today are John Browett, who is General Manager of the CC Link Partner Association Europe, and also David Bradley Folly, who is the General Manager, UK and Ireland, of HMS Networks, and I think also Director, John, if I've perhaps not quite got your title correct, but no doubt you'll put that right in a while. Both of them have extensive experience in this area, and they know each other very well also, so I'm sure we're going to have an excellent dialogue. So as a skeleton of what we're going to do today, David will start by providing us with a general overview of networking in general, why it's important in extracting smart data from manufacturing, processing plants and the like, and looking a little bit at the business case for smart data. We'll then involve John and we'll have an open discussion about any aspects that come from that, including any questions that we get. We'll then move to John, who will explain what CC Link is and how it fits in. And we'll also talk a bit about the subject of time-sensitive networks. And then we'll have another open discussion. And we'll finish by talking together on developments and trends in networking. What about moving to 5G and even 6G, and what effects that might have on legacy systems such as 2G and 3G based systems, what's going to happen to those. There's a beautiful word that David used called sundowning. So we'll find a bit about that. We'd like to talk about the growth in wireless networking, what the advantages and limitations of those are, and finally, some of the risks and mediations of cybersecurity aspects, because, you know, very often manufacturing and processing plant can be the way into a business. So we'll be talking about the risks there. With no more ado, I will pass over to David, who will just introduce himself in a little bit more detail than what I've done. And then he'll talk about networking issues. Over to you, David.
Yeah, thanks, Andy. Yeah, thank you for inviting me here today. Yeah, my name's David Bradley Folly. I'm the Managing Director of HMS UK Limited. That's the UK and Ireland. For those of you who don't know HMS, we're not the Navy. We're nothing to do with Her Majesty's ships. HMS is a global manufacturer of connectivity and IoT products. Our brands include brands such as Ewon, Anybus, Ixat and Intesis, and we have more cloud systems than you can shake a stick at. So we're like a sweet shop. So we help of connectivity products. So we basically help people who are using, say, a Rockwell product and they need to interface to, say, a Siemens product or any other third-party device manufacturer. So that's about me. John, did you want to introduce yourself before I talk about network?
Yeah, thanks, David. So yeah, my name is John Browett. I'm the general manager of the CC Link Partner Association in Europe. And what the CC Link Partner Association is, we are the organization that is tasked with the development and promotion of the CC Link open network family. We have an industrial Ethernet technology that's open for anybody to use to connect devices together in a factory or machine. And the technology that we most recently introduced was CC Link IETSN, which is the so far the only open industrial Ethernet which combines gigabit bandwidth and time-sensitive networking. And as Andy said at the beginning, we'll get a bit more into what time-sensitive networking is later on for those people today who haven't come across that yet. Thanks.
Yeah, well, one of the topics Andy's asked me to look at is basically, you know, why we want to use networks and smart data. This really comes down to, you know, there is a big revolution. I'm sure we've all read about it. You know, the IoT 4.0, all these little buzzwords that are flying around the industry. Really, what it comes down to is the devices are becoming a little bit smarter. They've got a lot more diagnostics inside them. You know, even a typical sensor has a lot of data, which in the old days you would never have. In the old days, it would just be it's on, it's off, and that was it. But now these sensors, even the smallest proximity switch, allows you to take this data out. But you've got to have some sort of networking connectivity to get it to where you want it. And this is where kind of smart data and networks come into their own. Now, whether that's a cabled network or whether it's a wireless network, it actually doesn't matter. But it's taking that low-level data up into a medium-level data. So you've got things in the medium levels like PLCs and HMIs and frequency inverters up to a higher level. You know, that would be where you've got your SCADA, your enterprise systems and stuff like this. And someone once told me that data is the new oil, which probably is going to make Greta Thunberg very happy. You know, the reason that companies should look at using more data in the systems, A, because it's there, and B, if they don't, then their competitors will be. So if you want to have competitive advantage, if you want to have higher availability of your systems, if you want to know what's actually going on, you want to know the energy consumption, you want to know all this, what we would call smart data, then networking and data gathering and taking that to a useful point where you can interpret that that data into proper information. This really is the way forward for any company. And also you're being backed up by things like legislation now. So if you've got things like the ESOS directive, which is an energy monitoring directive, so which was originally when we were in Europe, or part of the European Union, shall I say. I think we're still technically in Europe. So there was a directive about energy saving. And the British government, as well as all the European Union countries, are still obliged to follow that directive, which means that any company over 50 million euros, and that doesn't matter whether that's a library, a school, a manufacturing company, has to have an energy monitoring plan. And of course, energy monitoring plans means getting data. So if you're thinking of an industrial company, frequency inverters use a lot of energy. Motion controllers, linear motors all use energy. And so we have an obligation, a legal obligation actually, to gather that data. So this is why networks are very important. Gathering the data is very important. And yeah, I'm going to pass over to you, John, to talk about what type of networks there are.
Okay, thanks, then. So thanks, David. So yeah, well, you can kind of like take a historical view of this if you like. So, you know, going back 20 years or so, maybe a little bit further, there wasn't a lot of networks used in industry in general. You know, in those days, you typically found that things were all hardwired and there was a lot of wiring everywhere connecting things point to point, which, you know, obviously that had a lot of disadvantages. You had to do a lot of wiring work. It wasn't easy to troubleshoot it. If you wanted to change something, you had to rewire everything and so on. And so people started to realize, well, this is not really a good way to proceed. So sometime around that time, the first field buses started to be introduced, and they were a great step forward because they were the things which allowed you to therefore connect all your different devices together using a single cable. So you got better performance, more flexibility, even diagnostics and so on started to appear then. But the problem you had though at that stage was that there was many different field buses at that time. So there was like CC-Link, back in 2000 when it was first introduced. It was Profinet, sorry, Profibus, I should say, DeviceNet and so on. and they couldn't talk to each other. And although there were some efforts made to standardize all that, it didn't really achieve so much. And so a few years later on, you started to see Ethernet creep onto the factory floor. And the benefit of Ethernet was that it at least provided you with a standardized physical layer, as you could say. You know, the cabling and so on was all the same for everybody, whereas with the field buses, it was often different between different technologies. And but then, of course, the problem with Ethernet was that it wasn't really meant for a deterministic use, you could say, i.e. that means that you can never tell for sure when something was going to happen. Which, you know, if you're in an office sending emails, if it arrives 1 minute or the next minute, it doesn't really matter. But if you're running a high-speed packaging machine and everything's very tightly synchronized in terms of motion control, things even get a tiny amount of time, like milliseconds, unsynchronized with each other, then you're going to have problems. So I guess the next step was the various industrial Ethernet protocols started to appear, and we introduced CC-Link IE, and there's various other ones like Profinet and so on, and so that addressed that situation, and then so basically now we're in a situation where I think industrial Ethernet has become accepted as being the way that we connect things together. And these various protocols have all found favor with various industries in various parts of the world. But now we're kind of moving into the future where we're taking it one step further. So as I was mentioning at the beginning, two of the key points that are enabling that are gigabit bandwidth is becoming a real topic these days. You know, in the past, people used to think that 100 megabit bandwidth was fine. But as David was saying earlier, now we're getting this kind of, like, you could say, a metaphorical explosion of data on the factory floor. You need a lot more bandwidth to be able to deal with it all. And going along with that is time-sensitive networking, which as we'll dig into maybe in a little while, TSN, as everybody refers to it as, is offering more benefits on top of that, because now you have the ability to combine multiple types of network traffic together. Whereas in the past, you know, for example, on a machine, you might have had a safety network, a motion network, network IO, maybe some IT stuff going on as well, the cameras or something. And they were all typically running separate networks. Whereas now with TSN, you can combine all that together onto a single network. So therefore your machinery gets simpler, your design is simpler, your costs can be reduced, and so on. So you know, that's where we are, and that's where we're heading into the future. And, you know, we're proud to have companies like HMS as some of our partner companies, because they're giving our technology some really good support from the development point of view, so that the other vendors in the market can start building this technology into their products. And, you know, hopefully now we can all move into the future and make things better for everybody.
I think, you know, there's, as you mentioned, John, the kind of Ethernet networks are coming into their own. But, you know, there's still a lot of the old serial networks still out there, you know. And I think now we're coming into like this kind of economic sort of position in the UK where everyone's worried about the financial future going on. We don't know if we're going to go into a recession. So companies are actually keeping their existing networks and trying to get more life out of them. So even the old serial networks, which you mentioned, you know, like CC-Link, Profibus, you know, DeviceNet, they're trying to squeeze the last like remnants of juice, right, or it's data true. They can yeah. get out of it, because, you know, they don't want to go to that overall change to Ethernet. But as you said, that step change from going from traditional sort of serial networks to Ethernet, it kind of brings you into a whole different sort of ball game, because, as you said, you've got more bandwidth, you've got diagnostic tools, because you can start to use, you know, IT tools to help with diagnostics. And also, as you said, the data traffic and all this configuration, it kind of opens up new doorways, and you've got things where you can actually start selling your data. You know, you've got your PaaS systems, your SaaS systems, all these things. And I think it's an exciting time to move over. But, you know, there are still a lot of companies installing old, what you would probably deem as an old-fashioned network, because they don't want to make that change yet. But they can still maximize that data. I think what's kind of important, you know. And you obviously with CC Link, you've got this upgrade path, so it's very important for end users and systems integrators as well, because you know, going into an Ethernet network, you need more IT skills to a degree.
Yeah,
for diagnostics.
Well, yeah, it's absolutely true. I mean, you know, industrial automation in general, in terms of sort of like the speed at which it progresses, it's a bit of a paradox in a way, because, you know, Apple or whoever it is, they introduce the next iPhone like every 6 months or whatever it is, and you know, the rate of change in consumer electronics and those kind of industries is extremely fast. But yeah, you know, when you are building a production line for a factory and it's got to last maybe 10, 15 years or more, because it costs millions of pounds, euros, dollars, or whatever, you know, obviously the pace of change tends to be a lot slower, because that's a huge investment and it's got to pay for itself over a long time period. So as a result, you know, David's absolutely right. You do see people out there that are still using what you might term legacy technologies still. And, but yeah, you know, in the end, it will move faster in the future, I think. And I think, you know, the fact that technologies like Ethernet and other IT technologies, which are creeping into manufacturing now, is helping to drive that. I mean, you know, Andy was saying at the beginning about cybersecurity, and there's been good points and bad points about these technologies arriving. You know, obviously they've delivered a lot of benefits, performance, diagnostics, and all that kind of stuff. But at the same time, they brought some challenges with them too, which, you know, like cybersecurity in the past wasn't really a topic for manufacturing. Everything was kind of bespoke, and the only people who knew what was going on inside a system was the people that designed it. And of course, now that's not the case anymore. So things like cybersecurity have become much more of a topic.
I think that's kind of the change in the industry. I'm, you know, I don't know about yourself, John, but I remember the first PLCs, they had like a bespoke PLC chip, and only the manufacturer of the PLC knew what the chip did, you know, and then they went on to Windows CE versions of chips where you only put in certain parts of the operating system. But now you're using more common components, you know, like ARM processors. Anybody can go on the internet and get, you know, data on that processor, which, as you said, gives us more, how can we call it, better proven technology, and we can get, you know, we get a whole load of different features which we can add to these products. But you are opening it up to, let's call it, cybersecurity challenges. So,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
But so the more accessible the technology, the potentially easier it is to break into it, because familiarity is
it's
much
published
more general
on the internet, isn't it?
Which especially, is an interesting paradox, really.
But
how do you get around that?
Oh, my apologies. Well, just to clarify that, even on, you know, when you're looking at a typical Ethernet network, so, you know, TCP/IP, most companies, when they're using a TCP/IP network or developing it, they will just use a piece of shareware or whatever that they bought off the internet, which is a proven piece of technology. And that's great. You know, it works because it's used in millions of devices. But like all software, there are always flaws in it. You know, you can't guarantee a piece of software's got no mistakes in it. You know, I think, was it 10 mistakes to 25 mistakes in every 1,000 lines of code is a typical coding error. You know, typical computer's got 50 million lines of code. So, okay, you know, you can see how many little bugs can creep in. What's more worrying is I think a Tesla's got 100 million lines of code. So, you know, you don't want the blue screen of death as you're driving down the road. But you, all you can do is you know, use proven technologies, Andy. I think that's where companies are going. And the more companies who are developing these products, I mean, they do actually offer them up to people like Nviso to do what you call, you know, hacking of a device to see if they can find out any flaws. You know, this is legitimate hacking. And companies, you know, even companies like HMS, we pay companies like Nviso to try and break our products to find these. Some are just pure coding errors. Some are actually design errors. But all companies face that. The more complicated a product is, then, you know, the more code involved and the more likelihood there is some sort of vulnerability. But you have to try and patch it. You have to do your scenario testing. And I think, you know, this is a challenge for the industry. But I think at the moment, I mean, John, I don't know if you know more about this than me, but I think most of it's still on the kind of the PLC, the masters end, rather than the actual network. But I do know security, you know, we deal with a lot of customers. We supply interface cards to about 85% of the world's frequency inverter manufacturers. And they're looking at having cyber secure versions of those interface cards because they see that's where it's going. But I don't know if you're seeing it now, John.
Yeah, no, that's right, David. I mean, when cybersecurity first started to become an issue on the manufacturing floor, as it were, I think one of the first attempts to lock everything down, one of the first philosophies, if you like, was to basically put a big firewall in front of the factory so that the idea was to try and keep the bad guys out of the factory in general. And then hopefully if they couldn't get through the firewall, then you didn't really need to worry too much about what was behind it. But there was somebody I read once made some comment about if you build a 10-foot wall, sooner or later somebody comes along with an 11-foot ladder, and that's why now cybersecurity is, like you say, it's spreading throughout the plant. There's various vendors that we work with at CLPA, some again who are partners of ours, and they now have various devices and other measures that pretty much go right on the product itself. So like you said, if you've got a big inverter that's maybe running the motor that runs the sawmill, you can protect that directly rather than hoping that nobody actually can get into the sawmill. And that's definitely becoming the way that things are going now.
I think, that's something that we've noticed when speaking to a lot of end users. In the old days, everyone kind of rushed over to this kind of IoT purge. Everyone wanted IoT products or edge products and stuff like that. But now there seems to be a little bit more caution. And I think that's because there's been sort of instances where cybersecurity breaches have happened. I think Saudi Aramco was the big one, which, was quite well publicized in the press. But again, what that was actually human error rather than actually the technology failing. It's again, I won't get into conspiracy theories, this isn't the place for that, but but the technology itself was quite interesting that somebody managed to get through I think there was Schneider safety PLCs or something, I can't think, but this thing about these kind of publicized stories tends to make end users more cautious now. So I know when we're speaking to end users, they're saying, okay, we kind of distance ourselves from having things like remote access and remote monitoring, unless you can prove that your system is completely secure. But I think proving something is up to the best in class industry thing is very easy, but to guarantee that a piece of software with 100 million lines of code is completely perfect, you're never going to have it. I think I think Fujitsu are going through that problem at the moment, aren't they?
Indeed, unfortunately,
but I think their problems were much bigger because they were aware of the problems. It's the things that you don't know, but it is interesting that end users are now trying to restrict the amount of direct access to devices on a network. They want to try, as you said, I think, contain it through like a big firewall. And but if they do that, then they kind of miss out on the other opportunities they've got. Because if you can use, let's say, CC Link IE, and you can go directly to a device on it, then the manufacturer of that product, if there's a problem, he can log on to it, he can help with the maintenance, can help with the diagnostics, and can do it directly rather than having to go through a PLC, which is actually designed not to allow you access. So it's an interesting discussion. Do you allow people access to your network for a connection to minor devices, or do you just keep them, the other side of the master?
Yeah, well, it's a classic example of a double-edged sword, to use a cliche, isn't it? I mean, there's certainly a lot of powerful things you can do by having remote access to the plant or whatever it is. But at the same time, you want to make sure that access is only granted to those people who really should have it. So, you've got to make sure you're taking care of both sides of it.
Yeah. It is interesting. I mean, I don't know which way I would probably go. Probably I would side on the side of trying to get as much data out of the network as possible. But that's my personal belief. But whatever happens, if you don't innovate, if you don't start innovating, then your competitors will. That's the bottom line.
Absolutely.
You know, whether you're a food manufacturer, you know, if you're a Kellogg's going against a Dr. Oetker, if Dr. Oetker's using that type of technology to improve its productivity and speed and cut its costs and reduce its energy, you have to follow suit. So, you know, if you don't, you'll be left behind. You know, luckily there's organizations like the CLPO there to advise you on these things as well. You know, it's an open organization, so.
Right, absolutely, yeah.
Talking industry, topical debate from the world of engineering, automation, and manufacturing. Brought to you by DFA Media Group. This episode is sponsored by Drives and Controls, the number one event for automation, power transmission, and motion control. Taking place the 5th and the 6th of June 2024 at the NEC Birmingham in association with Smart Manufacturing and Engineering Week. Register now at www.drives-expo.com